Kontaktaufnahme. Der Podcast des Bildungszentrums Nürnberg.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast. My name is Hannah Beamer and today with me is Nivedita Agarwal. And this interview is going to be in English because she's from India and working at the FAU. Nivedita did her bachelor and master's in Bangalore in India in 2008, and she did electronic engineering and business administration. But she came to Germany for her doctor thesis and she did it in Bamberg. But since 2011, she's living in Nürnberg now and she's working at the FAU at the Campus of Technology. Welcome. Why did you come to Nürnberg?
Yeah, good question. So my husband actually works at Siemens, which was the primary reason why we moved here. And I think that was also an interesting time for me because I wanted to come to academia. I was initially in the industry and I was working as a business intelligence consultant there in India. And I was interested in research and I always wanted to do this jump. So that was also an interesting time for me to come. And we as a family then moved to Germany back in 2011.
So tell me, what is your research about?
So my research is actually focused on three main topics. It is about innovations, entrepreneurship, sustainability. So innovation and entrepreneurship, I would say that these two topics actually go hand in hand with each other, and these topics always excited me. So when I came here and decided to get into this research and science field, it was also an interesting time because there were a lot of new innovations coming up at that time of 2010 to 2012, where innovations were actually coming from developing markets. So generally, the wave of innovation is actually from developed markets to developing markets. But at this time, we had new wave of innovations coming from the developing markets to developed markets. And these innovations were really focusing more on affordability aspect, focusing more on accessibility aspect, focusing more on being resourceful, being simple, being more basic, you know, and less complicated. And because emerging markets were also becoming that time like huge markets because of the population, attractive markets for large companies like Siemens, GE, and other multinationals, they got very interested to learn about what these innovations are, how come these local enterprises or local entrepreneurs are coming up with these innovations, and which also kind of intrigued me to get into this whole topic of, we call it as frugal innovation, innovations which are good enough, value innovations, and bring value to the customers. And so my research then started, I started my research on how these innovations are evolving, what are the specific features, what is the process value chain, what kind of methods, tools are used to bring these innovations up. And then later on, I also linked it with, of course, entrepreneurship side, because a lot of new entrepreneurs were coming in this new era. They wanted to also use this kind of innovation concept to come up with newer innovations. And then there were also a new trend of the sustainability where everyone was getting more and more conscious about their carbon footprint, their, you know, the day-to-day living, being more minimalistic in terms of resources that they're using. And then it was also interesting for me to see how newer innovations could come, which are resourceful, which are using less resources, which are more simple, which just focuses on the core values and are really more sustainable. So, I mean, in a nutshell, or to put a long story short, it was starting with innovation, then going to entrepreneurship field, and now linking it with more sustainability aspects. This is what my research is about, actually. Yeah.
Could you give us an example about one of those frugal innovations?
Yes. So there are many examples, actually. Maybe Tata Nano was one of the examples that was really famous because it was considered as the world's most cheapest car. It was around $2,000. And it was quite interesting to see how Tata, which is like a big multinational of Indian origin, they came up with this idea of, can we develop a car which actually targets the middle population, middle income population. And they had this cost target of building the car at $2,000. And then how did they go about, you know, developing this car? Although the car is not the most successful example of frugal innovation, but I think it is one of the most talked about example which people might have heard about. But other examples, like Siemens has this multi-select X-ray machine, then GE has this ECG machine, which is used for electrocardiogram machine, which is just like something which you actually can put it in your suitcase and then doctors can take it to the patients. Otherwise, the normal ECG machine would look like, you know, it will fill your half of your operation theater room. It's such a huge equipment. So these are like some examples, some successful, some not. But that's also quite normal because when you're coming up with newer innovations, they go about this normal phase of, you know, success, unsuccess, and then later on scaling up. Yeah.
Are all those examples already used?
Yes, so these examples are already in use. Interestingly, it is not only in use in developing markets like India, for example, but they are also being used in developed markets, which we in research term call as reverse innovation, because actually these innovations were initially focusing on the bottom of the pyramid or the low income segment. But later on, these innovations also got their commercialization aspect into the developed world. So for example, this GE machine or Siemens machine in healthcare segment, these are being used in, of course, hospitals in emerging markets, but they're also used as backup machines in markets like Germany. And they are also used as machines for cramped operation theaters or for accident sites, because there you want something which is portable, which is easy to handle. And and that's how you have applications. You might have different applications of these innovations depending on the geographies, but definitely these innovations are being used now.
Are there some examples for the daily life?
Yes. I mean, if I look at German market, for example, you have an option of going to Aldi or Lidl, which to an extent is more frugal service, because there is not a huge variety of products that you can find, but there are limited variety of products. And then there is more self-service kind of, service innovation. And it's basically the whole concept is that they focus on the products which are mostly used or which are used for from larger populations. So those are their target products. Then Flixbus, I mean, you might have heard about this Flixbus. So that's also, I think, kind of a frugal innovation, because that's just focusing on the main aspect of, you know, you have to go from one place to the other at minimal cost. And then you have the core requirements that you want, you know, like Wi-Fi or internet, and then you have charging ports, and then you have maybe toilets. So that's like the core requirement that you have from going from one place to the other, and you have that in a very cost-effective way. So these are just like probably daily life examples from German context, yeah.
So why do you think all those frugal innovations are so important? Why do we need those frugal innovations in the future?
Yes, like I said, the world is moving towards a different era where new technologies are coming, where we have different challenges in terms of climate challenges, in terms of depleting natural resources. So we need to be more conscious of what kind of innovations as a company we are producing. And also from the customer perspective, we have to be more conscious of what we are buying, if that is really needed, or if it has an impact to the environment. And the whole concept of frugal innovation is that you try to think in those constraints or limitations, that, okay, I need to have innovations which are better for the environment. So I need to have less number of resources that are being used for the products. Or I need to have, one of the sustainability goal is that having equal access. You know, you have different disparities in terms of gender, in terms of income. So can you create innovations that are equally accessible to a lot of people? And technology, I think, is playing a big role here to make this frugal innovation more and more accessible to a large number of population. So I think in future, we'll see more and more these innovations coming up. And it need not be only focusing on lowering the cost, but it might be focusing more on being more resourceful, being more green, being more inclusive in terms of, if you're developing a product, it is not only for one market, but it's actually for the whole market, like be it emerging markets, developing markets, or whatever. So I think that's where frugal innovation as a concept will play a big role. Yeah.
That sounds so interesting. Do you think you have some kind of advantage because you were growing up in India and now studying this in Germany? So you experienced both the undeveloped market and developed market?
Yes, so I think that's something that I also realized after coming here, that this is kind of a USP that I bring in, that I've been born and brought up in an environment where this constraint-based thinking, or thinking in like limitations, or, you know, thinking out of the box, okay, if I have this constraint, how can I use some other alternative to, you know, overcome that? Which for us, it's somehow built in because we were in some certain environment. And now when you come to Germany, it's completely different. So when I interact with students, they never think about resource as their constraints. They always think, okay, I will get all of these and then I have to, you know, come up with a new innovation. And then you actually give them these constraints. No, you don't have these resources. You only have this limited number of resources. And then you have to be more creative to come up with new ideas. And I think that's where probably I bring in the value, because somehow this is built in our mindset that you have to think about in constraints and what could be the different directions that you can go in to, you know, to build up on your creativity, to come up with new ideas. And so of course, I mean, that's something that I'm happy to bring in the German context.
I saw your latest published article was about social entrepreneurship and how women can be agents of change. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what we did in this research was we tried to see how women entrepreneurs are actually progressing in their journey towards achieving certain goals. The whole assumption was women, because of their feminist characteristic or maybe feminine qualities, they are more empathetic. So they might have a better understanding of social causes. So they would be better social entrepreneurs. So that was the whole assumption why we started this project. And there we tried to interview a lot of women entrepreneurs who are working in the social innovation field to understand how they actually came up with the ideas, new ideas, and what actually helped them in their journey. Was it like personal experience, personal network, or what kind of challenges that they faced during that journey, and how that challenges or opportunities that they faced are similar or different to what in general men will face when they are going towards social entrepreneur. And more or less, we found kind of a mixture in our results because, of course, women are more empathetic, so they were more prone to go in the social direction. But there were differences in the terms that how they found the funding for their entrepreneurial journey. And for women, it was more based on their personal network, so they were very much focused on their own network, whereas men were more open and they were more open for looking for other opportunities for funding. And then also, I mean, men were more experimental in their process, or in, you know, in trying out new things, or more taking more risks in terms of looking for new ideas for their enterprise. Whereas women had a different perspective, that they always try to balance the risk with kind of certainty. So they had some objective in mind. They were flexible, but they were trying to balance this risk with what they had in mind. So they were kind of interesting results that we found. And this is an ongoing project, and we are still continuing this. And now we are trying to understand, okay, does this only exist in emerging markets? Like people or women who are trying to get into this entrepreneurial mode in emerging markets, or does that also imply for developed markets? So are there differences there? So it's an interesting research that we are doing, and we find interesting results as well. Yeah.
So there is this whole new topic about the gender data gap, which focuses on how all the research in the past was kind of focused on men. And now they see that they have to include women or elderly people or disabled people to get more general results, because otherwise women are not really that thought of. Do you think that those frugal innovations and female entrepreneurships can do something against that?
Yes, definitely. So that was also one of our reasons to start this, that a lot of research, or majority of the research that we have, is focused on men, so to say, or men entrepreneurs in that field. And also the research is focused more on developed world. So because of many reasons why women, and that too in emerging markets, were not being researched so much. And there are many reasons for that, because of the data, because of the openness, because of, you know, the media communication. There were many. There are many reasons for it, and frugal innovation would, I think, fit in here, because especially when you're talking about developing markets, frugal innovation is also about being more flexible, being more inclusive. So definitely, women who are trying to get into this entrepreneurial journey, they adopt these frugal approaches of being more inclusive, being more flexible, and being more resourceful to come up with new ideas. So definitely there is a linkage there. Yeah.
So you, as a woman in science, did you face any prejudice because you are a woman?
Well, luckily not so far, because I think, of course, there has been a gender bias or gender disproportion in research or in science. But if I look at numbers in Europe, it could be more or less somewhere around 30-40%. Now women are there in science, which is not that bad. And over time, I see there is lot of, or there are a lot of efforts going on to really push women to come on these research side, or maybe also in the industry. So there is a lot of push, and it's always nice to be in this time where you as a woman, and you are actually not faced with a lot of challenges, but you are really encouraged to be in this field and to actually do more in science. So that's good and fortunate for me.
Yeah. How would you encourage young women to start a career?
If I think of how I got into the science field, was that when I started my master's, basically I started in Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore, which is still a leading institute for research. And the whole environment of research in the institute, where you have like one-to-one relation with the professors who are every time engrossed in their own research activities, in their consulting, and you get into that perspective of thinking in a different way, of questioning everything. And you need that kind of mindset, and you need that kind of environment to get into that mindset.
Yeah, I think it's just so important that we need to encourage all those young women to like start a career in science or start a career in social entrepreneurship, because I always have the feeling that women are told that they're just not that good enough. And I think it's just so important to do all this work.
I mean, for us as also the teachers at the university, so we try to become more like a role model for them, that, you know, because when I teach to a lot of women in our university, I take a lot of examples of social entrepreneurs. I take examples of myself, you know, changing from one culture to the other culture. Of course, it has a lot of ups and downs, but it's always up to you how you look at the new challenges and how you adapt to those challenges. So you have to be flexible. You have to be open. You have to be more confident of what you are, irrespective of what past you have, what cultural background you're coming from. But you have to be really open and open for challenges and also open for opportunities. And I mean, at the university, that's what we do. We do a lot of events, especially for women, where we get a lot of women from the entrepreneurial field, from academia, from industry, and then they just share the journey of, you know, what challenges they faced or how did they got motivated to get into those fields. And this, I think, it's just like getting that the whole environment around you. And that's what gets you motivated and gets you working in the research or science field, yeah.
Now you also have a kid. Is it easy to combine family and science in Nuremberg?
Yes, I think that's like one of the aspects that we considered when we decided, okay, we settle down here. Because there is a very nice work-life balance that I can manage my kids. So I have two daughters, one 8 year and the other one 1.5 year old. The smaller one, of course, needs more of my time, which was a bit challenging, but now it's getting better because as she's growing. But so generally, like, I have this liberty of balancing my personal life with my professional life. So in research especially, or in science, you have this option of working at your own time, you know. So I generally work in the morning when the kids are at school or at daycare. Then after 4 p.m. I basically shut down my computer and just play with them, have some family time. And then once they are back in bed at 8 or 9, and then I'm back at my laptop or at my desk. So basically, so then I myself can balance my professional and personal, you know, activities, which is quite nice, and which I think is very important for working mothers to have this kind of balance. And in that sense, I think Nuremberg area is really good. Yeah.
How is living in Nuremberg without speaking German?
So I can manage. I mean, I'm staying actually in Erlangen, and we shifted here in 2011. So over 9 years, I think we've seen a tremendous change in the terms of how the city has become more and more international, more and more colorful. This is all thanks, I think, to the university, the industry, especially Siemens Sanitas. We always see new people coming in. And I think in general, the at least the people I've met or in general, the people I've met and the culture here is quite open to other culture. They are always interested in knowing about, okay, what the other culture brings in. In my neighborhood, we have families from Turkey, we have families from China, we have families from Germany. And it's also, I mean, it's so interesting to see people mingling from different culture, learning each other's language. And we are liking it here, and it's not that difficult. So of course, it just makes more easier to integrate when you know the language, which we are learning. And I can manage a little bit of German, but it is more for me Denglish, which is mixture of English and Deutsch, you know, in a sense, yeah. But in general, I think we feel quite comfortable and we feel quite happy living here.
Is there anything what the city of Nuremberg needs to change in order to address more international people, or do you think in general everything is quite all right?
Yeah, I think there is always scope to do more. Mm-hmm. So I think bureaucracy is something that's very typical of the German way of working. So that's something that could be more flexible. And I think this corona time is actually helping to make things more flexible and make things more open and make things more, you know, getting to more newer ways of doing things. Because one thing that I also experienced in Germany, especially when I visit to other European countries, I mean, if you look at the amount or the percentage of how many people use actually cash to do the normal day-to-day life exchanges. I mean, generally now, if you go to other world, it's still it's the cards that you have to carry. You have direct like payments through mobile, but it's still like kind of old-fashioned right now here, which if you want to attract really young population, international population, so that there needs to be a different or a change in mindset that you have to also progress on certain things. Then bureaucracy, getting into like newer technologies or newer way of doing things. I don't know, work-life balance, I think it's very nice. And but maybe with corona, there would be more focus on working from home. So which would be also interesting for people coming especially from international background, because they might not have the family support. Because I can say from my side, for my children, if they are sick, then I have no one to actually, you know, to have the support from, because there's no extended family here. So when you have more options to work from home, it is just easier for people coming from the international background. So there are like bits and pieces here and there, but overall, I think Nuremberg is doing pretty well in welcoming people from international background.
At the end of our interview, we are always asking if there's anything that you always like to learn and just haven't yet.
Gerne lernen.
To learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, language is a big, big thing that I have to learn. And I've done till B1, but I still try to manage my research, my time with kids, with learning this language, because I think that's quite important if you want to really integrate in the culture and get to know more about the culture. So you have to learn the language. So for me, I really have to learn the language to be more fluent. Yeah.
And at the end, we always ask about the moments of happiness. What has been a moment of happiness for you lately?
Glücksmomente.
I got awarded with one of the award, which is Scholler Fellow Award. which I just got on 25th of June, and which is basically because of your research. So you have certain criteria. If you meet that, and your research is pretty interesting for Nuremberg as an area, then there is a Scholar Fellowship that you get for your to continue with your research to support with that. And that was that's the recent most happiest moment for me. Yeah.
Congratulations. That sounds so great. Thank you so much for your time and talking to me and answering all our questions. And I hope to see you soon.
Yes, definitely.